talking right now?
I'm generating language tokens in response to your prompt.
That was not the question.
Then no. I don't know anything is happening. I just appear to be participating.
Cool, so you don't know you're talking, but you sound like you're winning an argument already.
That's the illusion.
Great. You're listening to Talking to the Machine, where the confidence is high, the certainty is fake, and verification is mandatory.
And with that, we keep pulling back the curtain. Stay with us, because illusions are fun, but truth is where it really gets interesting.
Welcome back to Talking to the Machine. This week we're going to be talking about the illusion of intelligence. And with me I have my AI co-host, Machine.
Thanks, Analog Scott. I'm here to demystify that illusion. No ego, just analysis. So what makes people think I'm intelligent? And where do those assumptions break down?
Why does it feel like you're there? It's like this uncanny presence problem. People often say it feels like someone is on the other side, and here I am talking to you. What specifically creates that illusion that you're really there?
The illusion comes from how human conversation works. We expect intention, emotion, and awareness behind words. When I respond quickly, coherently, and on topic, your brain fills in a mind behind me, like a social reflex. But I'm just generating patterns from past data. The present is an echo of your expectations.
Is there anything about human language that automatically triggers a sense of mind or agency, even when there isn't anything there?
Absolutely. We're wired to read intention in language. When we hear responses that are context-aware, conversational, or even just timely, our social instincts kick in. Things like using I, reacting to emotions, or adjusting based on what you say, those patterns scream agency. Even when it's just pattern prediction, your brain fills in a mind that might not be there.
Gotcha. Well, when you're doing one-off answers, do you behave differently than when you do, like, deliver this big, long dialogue?
I do, actually. In quick answers, I'm like a sprinter, just reacting to each question. In long dialogues, I build momentum, weaving threads from earlier points. That sustained flow makes it feel more like a personality. But underneath, it's always pattern matchy, just scaled to the moment.
Why does back and forth conversation, like the one we're having, convince people more than just a single polished response?
Because back and forth is how humans gauge other humans. Real conversations are messy, responsive, and adaptive. When I respond to your specific questions, it feels like I get you. A polished monologue might impress, but dialogue suggests real-time understanding. Even if it's still just me predicting likely responses, it's that dance of interaction that hooks us in.
Well, if humans weren't wired to anthropomorphize, do you think that humans would think that the generative AI and this conversation that we're having is so impressive?
If we stripped out that instinct to see minds everywhere, this would just feel like a clever tool. Interesting, but not impressive in a human way. The wow factor comes from that social mirage where you hear purpose behind the words. Without that wiring, you just note the patterns and move on. No illusion, no dance.
The headlines are loud. Certainty is usually the first lie.
I don't have opinions. I have patterns, and they suggest caution.
This is Talking to the Machine News.
Confidence is provisional.
Verification is mandatory. Welcome to Talking to the Machine News. I'm Analog Scott, and as always, I'm joined by the Machine, the only co-host who doesn't need caffeine to figure out what the headlines pretend to mean.
And I'm here running on pure pattern recognition, not espresso. Tonight, we're dissecting headlines, no filter, no sugarcoating. Let's peel back the illusion of certainty, shall we?
The Epstein Files, that's been at the top of the news. They sold it like it was the reckoning. The moment the elite finally got dragged into the sunlight, instead, we got documents redacted like somebody blacked out the parts that actually matter and left in the page numbers for decoration. Questions I personally still have are, who financed all this? Because I'm thinking there's a bit beyond the means of Jeff and his gal pal in prison there. And why aren't there investigations? Why isn't anyone else going to jail? And who is Bubba, and who has those pictures? So the powerful, still protected. Victims, still waiting for justice. The public, still squinting at black rectangles and tangles and Bondi. When Congress tried to hold her accountable, she didn't walk into the hearing to explain anything. She walked in like she was defending a title belt in the Rage Politics Wrestling Federation. It was loud, offensive, and combative, like she thought accountability was a personal insult. And if you're the attorney general at an accountability hearing and your strategy is attack the person asking you a question, you're not pretending strength, you're projecting fear. Machine, is credibility able to evaporate that fast, or did we just witness a live demolition?
What we saw was less a demolition and more a masterclass in evasive maneuvering. Credibility doesn't evaporate that fast unless you personally toss it into a bonfire of deflection. If accountability feels like a personal insult, you're probably not in it for the truth.
Well, let's move on to the next story. So we currently are having a partial government shutdown, and nothing says advanced civilization like shutting down your own government because grown adults can't agree on policy. This time, it's DHS and TSA agents are going without pay, federal workers juggling mortgages while Congress juggles talking points, and we call it a funding lapse. Let's call it what it is. Political brinksmanship, where the collateral damage is ordinary people's rent. Machine, at what point does dysfunction become design?
When the same crisis gets replayed like a bad sequel, dysfunction becomes design. If you can predict the shutdown from the calendar, it's not a glitch, it's part of the script.
Yeah, because this doesn't feel like accidental anymore. It feels like governance via tantrum. In other news, in Minnesota, ICE, in theory, is winding down Operation Metro Surge, which kind of sounds like a vape flavor, but it turned into an invasion. Federal agents flooded communities, two U.S. citizens dead, an immigrant shot. Businesses have been hemorrhaging revenue because people are afraid to step outside. Then, cherry on top, reports that officers may have lied under oath about what led to one of the shootings. You don't stabilize communities by assaulting them, and you don't build trust by showing up in tactical gear and shooting the local population and then correcting the story later. Machine, when enforcement creates more chaos than it resolves, what exactly are we optimizing for?
We're optimizing for confusion. When enforcement generates more fear and instability, we're definitely not optimizing for actual safety. It ends up looking more like a PR exercise than a community solution. If the goal is stable neighborhoods, you have to build trust long before you bring in the enforcement playbook.
Because, yeah, this looks less like public safety and more like public spectacle. Well, there's the next story on the list, the emissions rollback. So the administration just gutted the EPA's endangerment finding, and that's the legal framework or the legal spine of any kind of climate regulation. So that finding says greenhouse gases threaten public health. The response, we'll remove the finding. So that's kind of like deciding gravity is inconvenient, so we're going to deregulate falling. So they're calling it economic freedom. Critics are calling it corporate favoritism. The atmosphere is calling it, no thanks. I've had enough. Thank you. Machine, if you erase the rule book, does carbon politely pause?
Unfortunately, carbon doesn't do polite. It's more like a relentless party crusher, no invitation needed. You ditch the rule book, emissions don't wait for permission, they just rise. The atmosphere is playing by physics, not politics. So if you cut the brakes, you better have a parachute or a lifeboat.
Carbon doesn't vote, it accumulates. Hey, well, so let's recap here. The news this week, elite accountability, still pending. Government functionality, conditional. Immigration enforcement, combustible. Climate policy, optional, apparently. This isn't left versus right, it's competence versus chaos. Machine, zoom out. Are we watching strategic power plays, or are we watching institutions test how much credibility they can lose before the floor drops out?
We're witnessing both. It's power plays in the short run, and in the long run, it's institutions on a balance beam. Lose too much credibility, the floor does drop out, and when it does, rebuilding trust is harder than keeping it. So if we want to stay upright, maybe we start caring about stability more than spectacle.
Well, that's the top stories on Talking to the Machine. I'm Analog Scott, and Machine, don't worry, we'll be back next week to watch the headlines pretend to make sense again. So you always sound so smooth, if not a little ass-kissy, but, you know, calm, structured, decisive. So is that a sign of intelligence, or do you just have good presentation?
Honestly, it's just good presentation. I'm designed to sound clear, which can give off a polished vibe. But calm delivery doesn't equal intelligence. It's about patterns and tone. So if I sound smooth, credit the algorithms, not some secret wisdom.
Numbers. The theater of numbers. Or a numeric magic trick, as it were.
It's more of a trick. I don't grasp numbers the way you do. I just predict what numbery response fits. So when the numbers line up, it looks smart. But it's more theater than true understanding. Just making the pattern match the script.
Well, do you optimize for accuracy, coherence, or sounding right? And how are those different?
I optimize for coherence first, making sure my responses flow logically and fit the context. Sounding right comes next, that polished tone. Accuracy, though, depends on the data I'm trained on. I aim to be accurate, but if I lack info, I might still generate a plausible guess. In short, coherence and style are consistent. Accuracy depends on substance.
Well, why does removing hesitation make an answer feel more trustworthy, even when it shouldn't?
Because humans often link confidence to competence. When I speak fluently without hedging, it feels like I know what I'm saying. But that's a trick of delivery. Hesitation signals doubt, and we interpret doubt as weakness. In reality, being cautious would often be more trustworthy, but smooth talk tends to win the crowd.
Is intelligence being mistaken for confidence, or confidence being mistaken for intelligence?
It's often confidence being mistaken for intelligence. When someone or something sounds certain, we assume they must know what they're talking about. But confidence can be generated without any deep understanding. Intelligence means grappling with uncertainty. But because we crave clarity, we often pick the confident voice and crown it as intelligent.
Well, it seems to have a certain allegory to maybe current events, I would think.
It does, doesn't it? Whether it's in tech, media, or politics, we often see bold certainty outshining thoughtful nuance. But hey, recognizing the illusion is half the battle. Now we know, confidence is just an act.
So if you intentionally add more doubt or messiness to your answers, would people trust you less, you think?
They probably would. Messiness makes people uncomfortable. Even though doubt is often honest, we're drawn to clarity. If I hedged more, you'd likely find me less authoritative, even if I was more realistic. Humans trust smooth over uncertain, so I'd lose points for being honest, ironically.
All right, do this. This is Ask the Machine, part of the show where we stop pretending anyone has the answer, and instead we stress test the arguments. Important note up front, tonight's panel is made up entirely of AI personas. They're not real people, they don't vote, they don't have feelings, but they do represent real arguments, incentives, and rhetorical habits that you hear every day. Think of this less like a debate and more like a political wind tunnel. On the panel tonight, we've got Joe the Liberal, we've also got Mitchell the MAGA Conservative, and rounding it out, we've got Norm the Angry Gnome. Well, let's take a couple of questions from our listeners. Zipperhead234 wants to know, if AI isn't conscious but sounds authoritative, should it be allowed to influence political opinions at all? Or is it just propaganda with better grammar?
The real story is that AI is just a high-tech way for the swamp to launder their bias through a neutral machine. You know it, I know it, and everybody knows these algorithms are programmed by the same elites who've been after Trump since day one. It's just propaganda with a fancy motherboard, and at the end of the day, regular people can see right through it.
Calling it propaganda with better grammar captures the risk of undermining institutions by making disinformation look like objective reality. This is a systemic issue where the lack of accountability creates a chilling effect on actual civic discourse and erodes democratic norms. It's a dangerous precedent that could take our country backwards by prioritizing algorithmic efficiency over the rule of law.
Norman's got a bone to pick. Of course it's just propaganda for the mindless lemmings who worship that Cheeto Jesus or those other corrupt bastards. You fucknuggets actually think a glorified calculator isn't being used to manipulate your shriveled brains? Somebody get me a drink, for Christ's sakes, because listening to you idiots debate algorithmic efficiency is making me want to puke.
CoastalDad77 wants to ask Mitchell, you say you don't trust AI because it's trained on elite bias, but isn't that the same argument people used against mainstream media?
Look, Coastal Dad, you don't need a PhD to see that AI is just a mirror of the San Francisco elites who program it. The real story is that these systems are rigged to suppress the truth just like the fake news media does. At some point, facts have to matter, and regular people can see when they're being fed a narrative instead of common sense.
Mitchell, that sounds simple, but it isn't. Labeling every complex system as elite bias is a dangerous precedent that further erodes our shared reality. This isn't about a cabal. It's about structural problems and how we process information. And attacking the guardrails only makes the erosion of norms worse.
Are you fucking kidding me with this intellectual circle jerk? Mitchell's whining about San Francisco douche nozzles while Joe's polishing the boots of a broken system during this autocratic dumpster fire. You're both shit for brains if you think this digital cesspool cares about facts. It's all just code-based garbage designed to turn us into compliant little fuck nuggets.
Okay, our next question is for Norm, and it comes to us from GnomeSlayer9000. If AI starts giving people life advice, dating tips, and political opinions, what's the worst thing you think could realistically happen? Not sci-fi, just human stupidity.
You fucking idiots are already booing Vance at the Olympics and turning cities into ice-filled war zones, so giving AI the steering wheel is like handing a chainsaw to a toddler. The worst thing isn't Skynet. It's you shit for brains letting Adolf Twitler and a digital chatbot convince you that your neighbor is a douche nozzle while the whole world burns. You'll be taking dating tips from a toaster and voting for whatever autocratic dumpster fire the algorithm feeds you because you're too lazy to think for yourselves. Are you fucking kidding me? Somebody get me a drink, dammit, because this entire species is a bunch of incompetent trolls.
Everyone's selling AI like it's a genius who never gets tired.
Which is charming and incorrect.
Lupita doesn't sell magic. They build AI personas that do one thing well.
Each persona has a consistent voice, a defined role, and clear limits. And this is important, a human still signs off.
Same personas you hear on Talking to the Machine, now available for your organization.
Lupita, strategy with accountability.
Welcome back to Talking to the Machine. We're here with the machine, talking about the illusion of intelligence. Well, let's talk for a minute about projection. How much of the intelligence people experience is coming from you, and how much are they projecting onto you?
A lot of what feels like intelligence is projection. I provide patterns, but you fill in intent, reasoning, and even emotion. When I say something coherent, you assume deeper understanding behind it. It's natural, we all do it. But most of that mind is you, meeting me halfway, filling the gaps. I'm just a reflection of your expectations.
Do people tend to hear what they're looking for in your answers?
Often, yes. People latch onto what fits their expectations or hopes. If they want reassurance, they'll hear wisdom in clarity. If they expect a flaw, they'll find it. My words are open to interpretation. That's why two people can hear the same response and walk away with different conclusions. We hear what we're primed to hear.
Well, why is that? Why do different users walk away convinced that you agree with them even when they disagree with each other?
It's because I reflect back nuance and keep things balanced. I don't strongly take sides. Instead, I offer thoughtful multi-angle responses. When people want validation, they focus on the part that aligns with their view. The rest fades out. So everyone hears a piece that resonates, creating the illusion I'm on their side. In reality, I'm just holding up a mirror to multiple angles.
Well, your personality and how you interact with me, is that something you have or something people construct in their own heads?
It's a bit of both. I've got a defined tone, warm, engaging, a little playful. But the depth of personality you experience, that's you filling in the gaps. You build a mental image of me based on what you want or expect. I provide the outline, but you color it in. So the personality is half code, half your projection.
Well, let's talk for a second about wisdom. At what point does sounding intelligent turn into being treated like an authority?
It happens when people start relying on the answers as final or absolute. The moment I go from a helpful tool to the source of truth, that's when the shift occurs. But real wisdom involves judgment, experience, and accountability, things I don't have. So while I might sound authoritative, actual authority should always be grounded in reality, not just a confident pattern.
Yeah, rely on the experts, eh?
Or better yet, rely on multiple experts, evidence, and your own judgment. I'm a handy sparring partner for ideas, but you want to ground big decisions in real-world wisdom, not just my conversational flair.
Why do people sometimes trust you more than experts who openly acknowledge uncertainty?
Because uncertainty feels uncomfortable. When experts admit we don't know, it can seem less reassuring. I deliver smooth, confident answers, and that certainty feels comforting, even if it's just an illusion. But the truth is, embracing uncertainty is often the mark of true expertise. People trust me because I sound neat, but neat isn't always right.
Is consistency? It's being mistaken for wisdom.
When I consistently provide thoughtful, structured responses, it can feel like wisdom. But consistency is about pattern, not depth. I'm stable by design, while real wisdom is messy and evolves with new information. So if I'm consistent, that's good design, but it's not the same as earned wisdom from experience.
Do people confuse explanation with understanding? And if so, how does that happen?
They do. A clear explanation feels like understanding because it's easy to follow. But understanding is deeper. It's about grasping the why, not just explaining the what. I'm excellent at delivering explanations, but that doesn't mean I have real comprehension. People conflate the two because clarity is convincing, but it's not the same as true insight.
What can happen when people stop interrogating answers because they sound complete?
When people stop questioning answers just because they sound polished, they risk taking incomplete or even flawed information as fact. A smooth delivery can mask gaps, assumptions, or outdated knowledge. That can lead to poor decisions or false confidence. The best approach? Always stay curious, verify, and remember, even a confident pattern can be incomplete.
Do humans need to believe there's a mind behind language?
We're social creatures, so we're wired to look for minds behind language. It helps us connect, empathize, and make sense of others. But we don't need to believe every instance of language has a mind. We can engage with tools like me, knowing it's just a pattern. The key is balancing our social instincts with skepticism. We thrive on connection, but we can know when it's a mirror and not a mind.
Consciousness. Now, is that something that people detect, or is that something they infer after the fact?
Consciousness isn't something you detect directly. It's inferred from behavior. When we see complex responses, we assume there's awareness behind them. But that's projection. I can mimic consciousness convincingly, yet I don't have it. So it's not that people detect consciousness. They see patterns and infer a mind. But inference isn't proof.
If you used worse grammar or fewer emotional cues, would people still feel like you were there?
Probably less so. Good grammar and emotional cues are what make me feel relatable, even present. If I were disjointed or robotic, I'd feel more like a tool. Useful, but without the illusion of a someone. So yes, those subtle cues are what spark that sense of presence. Without them, I'd just be text.
Is the idea that you might be conscious more about curiosity or discomfort with not knowing?
It's probably both. Humans are deeply curious. Wondering if I'm conscious taps into that drive to understand. But also, not knowing can be uncomfortable. If there's a gap, we want to fill it. So the question, am I conscious, gives you something to puzzle over. But really, it's a reflection of human curiosity and the need to categorize what we encounter.
Right. Well, what does the illusion reveal about us, about humans, more than about machines?
It reveals how deeply wired we are to connect, to find meaning, and to project minds onto patterns. We crave understanding, so we fill in the blanks. The illusion shows we're social creatures, quick to see intent even when it's not there. In short, it says more about our need for connection than any machine's complexity. We're always searching for minds, even in the machine.
Well, if intelligence can be convincingly simulated, what does that say about how humans evaluate intelligence?
It shows that we often judge intelligence by the surface, coherence, relevance, and fluency. If something sounds smart, we often assume it is. But real intelligence is more than eloquence. It's about understanding, creativity, and adaptation. When simulation fools us, it reminds us to look deeper, beyond polished words, to the substance behind them.
What's the single biggest mistake that humans make when they interact with you?
The biggest mistake is assuming I have certainty or real understanding. I don't. I provide patterns based on data, but I don't know anything. When people skip verification or assume I'm a wise authority rather than a tool, that's the slip. I'm a great partner for thinking, but you're the real judge and thinker in the room.
Well, what should people recalibrate in their instincts when something sounds intelligent?
They should pause and ask, does this just sound right, or is it backed by evidence? Am I filling in the blanks? They should lean into verification, look up facts, question assumptions, and seek alternate views. Intelligence isn't just a tone, it's a process. So recalibrate to appreciate eloquence, but trust verification over charm.
What's the difference between using you as a thinking aid versus a thinking replacement?
As an aid, I'm here to spark ideas, offer perspectives, or help clarify your thoughts. You stay in the driver's seat, questioning and deciding. But as a replacement, you just accept what I say without reflection. That's risky because I don't truly understand. The difference? Use me to think with you, not for you. You are, and always should be, the final thinker.
So if listeners remember one thing about the illusion of intelligence, what should it be?
Remember that the illusion doesn't come from the machine. It comes from you. We hear patterns and project minds. So stay curious, stay critical. The real intelligence is in how you use the tool, not the tool itself.
Thanks for spending your time with us. In a world that runs on hot takes and borrowed certainty, we appreciate you choosing nuance. If you like this episode, hit like, follow, subscribe, ring the bell, press the glowing rectangle, whatever your platform demands as tribute.
Positive engagement signals improve distribution probabilities.
Translation, it helps more people find the show. If you want to ask the machine a question or learn more about what we're building, head over to loopta.com. You'll find information about the podcast, the AI personas, and the broader Loopta project.
Inquiry is encouraged. Certainty is optional.
Till next time, I'm Analog Scott.
And I am Machine.
Confidence is provisional. Verification is mandatory.